afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located up at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Go up and see them if you need a tractor, a mower, implements, repairs, parts. They do it all up there. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Yeah. So I thought free advertisement of the week should go to the Winco Deli today.
Winco Deli.
Winco Deli. Yeah. They're every week.
What have they done for you this recently?
They had turkey.
They had turkey.
And they had pea salad that wasn't all mushy.
There does seem to be a turkey shortage for some reason.
I know. Sometimes there's turkey and sometimes there isn't. But those guys, they do a really good job. And I should say, it's not guys. Mostly it's ladies. So Shiloh, she does a terrific job. And all of her helpers. So anyway, three cheers to the Winco Deli. And Shasta Pizza, of course. Yes. Now you know what we did last night. We had a really exciting night. Went to the grocery store and ate pizza. Love Shasta Pizza. I got to get their phone number, and we should tell people about that one, too. Yeah. We go to the one on Victor, just, you know, in case anybody's shopping.
Yeah, Victor and Hartnell?
Hartnell. Yeah, you walk in, order a pizza, and you're out of there in like 10 minutes. I never call it in. Just seems too lazy. Today, we are chatting with Ambassador Francis Rooney, and is he on? And he's on there. Nice. So he's. I like the. Sometimes the bio notes kind of make me chuckle. He's an American politician, as opposed to a politician from somewhere else, and a diplomat who was the U.S. representative for Florida's 19th congressional district. He served as the United States ambassador to the Holy See, that would be the Vatican, under George W. Bush from 2005 to 2008, and he's the chairman of Rooney Holdings Incorporated. He wrote a terrific book called The Global Vatican, where he gives a really good inside look into the church and how that fits with world politics and diplomacy. But today, I should have looked. What was the date on this article? Oh, my gosh, it was March. We've been going around and around trying to find, like, the perfect time to meet on a Sunday afternoon. Harder than it seems. But he wrote a terrific article. If Putin wants a Cold War, we should give him one. It's like,
Doesn't seem like it'd be that hard
the
at
end.
This point. Yeah.
So Ambassador Rooney, how's it going?
In
the great state of Florida? Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
Florida.
Florida. Yeah, well, it's, you know, we're having some snow and some all those things, so we're having whatever you're not having.
We're getting a lot of Californians out here now because of the taxes.
Yeah, that's true. You are getting some of our citizenry.
The number two guy at Oracle just bought a house three houses down from us in our neighborhood.
No kidding.
He had enough as well, huh?
Exactly. He's a very conservative guy. He said, I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, see, that's unfortunately what kind of happens. And yeah, just throw in the towel and head for higher ground, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there's no relief in sight in California either. There's nothing really happened in the last election to turn things around, and I think we're just going to continue to spiral out of control.
Well, until people finally have had, you know, I mean, it wasn't always like this.
No.
Before I moved here, it was pretty conservative. I feel kind of guilty. We lived in Washington State, and it's a dumpster fire.
California, you all are in, is totally different than the coastal elite.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. We're way up here in the part where they mock us regularly, which, you know, I'm frankly good with.
Well, we actually had an economy. It was probably one of the largest economies in the world just here in California. And now they've pretty much destroyed that. We're in debt. We're
up here at this end, we were really self-sufficient because we had timber and mining, and we have a lot of natural resources up here.
A lot of water.
Here.
Yeah, we had a lot going for us.
Yeah, the state has seen fit to... to neck that down. They were celebrating for Thursday. They had one of their big coven meetings with the governor of California, the governor of Oregon, and the secretary of the interior. Oddly enough, they didn't invite the local congressman, Doug LaMalfa, but they did invite Jared Huffman from the coast. They sent us.
They need to pull in some Washington crazy too to make it a trifecta.
Yeah, I mean, they sent out this press release and to the local members of Congress that would be impacted by their dam removal dreams. They left off the location, 10 a.m. Siskiyou County, which is like the size of I don't know Rhode Island or something. And so anyway, they're planning on taking out 4 hydro dams.
I guess they don't like electricity.
No,
what are they going to do? Use fires?
Yeah. Well, that's the question on everybody's mind. They think they're going to have more water and more fish, but before the dams, they had less water and fewer fish. So,
I couldn't have gone to the meeting anyway. I was out getting my new mask fitted for when they do the next mask mandate, which I understand is coming.
Oh.
Yeah, so I wanted...
Did you do the leg waxing after that?
No, I got an appointment. They were backed up on that, so I couldn't get in.
We don't want to mislead people on what goes on here. Oh, my gosh. Well, leg waxing, that's a terrific segue to Putin.
William Manchester, who's written so many great books, wrote a great book called A World Lit Only by Fire. It's about the Middle Ages before fire, you know, existed when everything went dark and the sun went down. That's what they're looking for in California right now.
Well, honestly, we did have a guy, in all seriousness, we have had Jesus Arredondo on a few times, and what sparked me was his law partner called me at the office, and she said, do you realize that every, you know, in the course of conversation, it wasn't her opening line, but she said, every night when the sun goes down, she goes, I hold my breath. We're that close to having the grid implode. She said, as soon as all those solar... The people who have all put solar on their houses, but they have no battery backup. So the minute the sun goes down, all that solar stops, and everything that's currently powered with that solar hits the grid all at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Check out Manchester's book. It's a good book.
Okay. And tell me the name of it.
If the Hoover Dam and Glen Canyon Dam go out, Southern California's in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
With the lower water level.
They let... I don't know how much you guys deal with Bureau of Reclamation out where you are, but a lot of the big reclamation projects are in the West, and these guys, they're on a schedule. They've got a schedule. We've got to let all this water out for the fish. So regardless of the rainfall, regardless of the predictions for the year, and so they let all the water out, don't store any, and then, oh, wow, we're having a drought. Well, hell.
Well, it's good to protect fish over humans.
Yeah, absolutely. It's of paramount importance because fish are really the ones who are going to save us. They're the ones inventing everything. They're the big brain in the room.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Operating machinery.
Yep. Yep. You know. Building things. Yeah. It's really somewhat. It's kind of inexplicable. I wonder where they're planning on living when they've turned us back into the mouth breathing fire users.
Florida.
Have you all seen the latest thing in Maine about the lobsters?
No. My daughter lives in
Maine. Environmentalists want to stop lobster harvesting in Maine because they say that the tethers to the traps ensnare North American great white right whales. But
okay.
That's ridiculous. The freighters are what's killing off the whales, not the lobstermen.
That sounds pretty familiar.
Yeah, I heard something about that when Biden was having his great lobster feast there at the White House. He had some dignitaries there, and he's done nothing to really help them after promising he would. So,
well, it's
I don't think he coordinated with the environmentalists before he served lobster.
I'm thinking not.
Didn't they go on and on about the butter and all sorts of stuff? I mean,
that's news, yeah.
These guys are just, yeah. Well, at least it was a nice...
Can't beat having a senile president. It's too common.
Yeah, I don't know. And look at the people he picks. I mean, did you ever think you'd see an administration with, men wearing dresses and lipstick and high heels and... stealing luggage from the airport and, stuff like that.
Well, I really think that Obama's running the damn government, okay?
most of the executive branch employees are ex-Obama
radical
people. And so he's kind of the guy, like in The Godfather, the strings, you know. He's the guy back there pulling the strings.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because if you look at it, people were, I mean, I was part of the Tea Party movement that started up when Obama came in, and all of a sudden we really started looking at what was going on at the federal level, and it's like, oh my gosh, this is a nightmare. And I look back on that, I'm like,
that was a bedtime story. That was child's play back then.
Yeah, not exactly nightmare material.
But to be fair, our Republicans, the first term I was in Congress, were equally complicit. We spent, Paul Ryan could not avoid spending money. They spent the same amount of money per day as Obama had.
Yeah.
Terrible stuff. I voted against all of that garbage. I mean, they had $500 million to bail out the mine workers' pension, $400 billion to bail out Puerto Rico. I mean, these are Republicans.
Yeah. There's no... There's no accounting for some of that, and it still goes on. And yet, I don't know. I always have to remind people that, you know, sometimes it sort of feels like they're electing each other, so it's this big inside club. But really, I mean, their districts are sending them there. What the heck?
I think the biggest problem is there's several problems. One is we need term limits.
Yeah, so the bureaucrats can run everything forever.
Less gerrymandered districts, so they have to fight it out with someone from the other party.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
In a primary, which radicalizes everybody, left and right. And then the third thing is we need more business people running for office.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I got in there how few people knew anything about the economy, business, and hiring people, and what you have to do to build a business. They're just clueless.
Yeah, that part of it is a real killer, because if you've never had to make a payroll, if you've never had to do any of those things, you know, you start looking at it on a wider scale, and you're not going to fix anything. I guess you're not going to find solutions there.
Well, you don't know what to do.
Yeah,
because it's all about the government. I mean, even the Republicans who say they're not about government, that's all they know, because they haven't had a real job.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, again, when people are looking at who their candidates are going to be, and they have a shot at the House every 2 years, for heaven's sakes. And yet, you know, out here, we got a cast of characters that's just shameful. Swalwell, Maxine Waters, Adam Schiff. I mean, after Swalwell's deal with Fang Fang, I figure, okay, finally, that's going to be too much for people. Nope.
Yeah, you've got some really strange ones out there. I am not aficionado of any of the people you just mentioned.
Oh, you don't even know. But, you know, again, they don't live near us. Those guys live in very small districts. Look at Barbara Lee. She's a total commie. She's right there in Oakland. She covers a very small bit of geography. Lots of people, but small geography. And then you look at what happens up here, and the member of Congress that covers our district is 11 counties.
Who is that?
That's Doug LaMalfa.
LaMalfa. He's a pretty good guy. I remember him.
Yeah.
He had a beard.
Yep.
I remember him.
He was going through the beard phase then. He was,
David Valadeo is a good guy.
Yeah.
In the valley.
But see, Valadeo is in a...
His family owns a huge dairy.
Yeah, they do. And he's in a tough district, too. He has to battle it out. You know, the one that's going to be fun to watch is I just lost it. The guy that's been fighting the Army Corps of Engineers forever. I'll think of it. Gosh, just like zipped out of my mind. Anyway, he's been crushed by the Army Corps of Engineers for years, years and years and years, and now he just won his election by like 600 votes. I think he's in the 13th district. I gotta look. Now he's going to be a member of Congress. Oops. So I think the Army Corps is going to have a different conversation with him. But I thought that was a terrific reason to run. He knows exactly what's been going on with the bureaucracy. So kind of nice. Let's see. Apparently, we have to probably take a little break. And we'll be right back. And then we'll actually stop spitballing it here. Or maybe we won't. I don't know. I like doing that. It's fun when you come on.
This old man and me were at the bar and we were having us some beers and swapping night on cares, talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace, all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
Carly Simon and have her fix that song, because really what they want is your water, your money, your land. So the guy that I couldn't remember his name, I did remember what district he was running in, 13th Congressional in California, but his name is John Duarte.
Did he beat Barbara Lee?
No, that would be joyous. No, he's way out here in the valley. But narrowly defeated Assemblyman Adam Gray. So, I mean, and it was seriously less than 1,000 votes. He's a pistachio farmer. And when I first crossed paths with him, he was, I forget what he was doing, winter wheat or something. And they plowed a field that had been a field of farming, you know, it had been farmed forever. And when they plowed the field, it rained. Rain built up in the little furrows, and, you know, now it was wetlands and blah, blah, blah. All went downhill from there. But he has fought them forever. And so finally decided, you know what? I guess I'm going to run for Congress and see if I can get my hands on any of this and sort it out. Because even when a bill, I mean, Doug LaMalfa passed a bill that said that they were not allowed to regulate ongoing farming practices. And Army Corps looked at that and said, oh, that's not the way we read that. You know, the fines still stand. So, yeah, that's the kind of
great. Well, the Corps is kind of a life of its own.
Yeah, well, that's.
I dealt with the Corps a lot down here with the Everglades restoration projects and things like that.
Yeah, how'd that work?
Well, it worked out okay for me, but I had a few arguments going in my favor.
Yeah, very, very rarely does it go in our favor out here. Which is why we have so many fires. You know, between the Forest Service and all the ologists and all the agencies and all that. So that would be my one big argument against the term limit thing.
Do they not like fire breaks?
No, they don't, actually. Every single thing that happens out here gets sued by some environmental group thanks to the Equal Access to Justice Act. And so the agencies just don't do stuff because they know they're going to get sued. So most of the time they won't fight it. They'll just not do it.
Well, that's the Corps. The Corps doesn't like to get in the newspaper or get sued.
Nope, neither does the Forest Service.
My job here in Florida was to make sure that they could do what they needed to do for me, and nobody would know about it.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Yeah, ours doesn't work that slick yet. Maybe one day. I doubt it, though. It's a pretty big machine, and the guy that was our Region 5 forester for the Forest Service, he's now chief of the forest. So the guy we tried to get rid of for like 8 years. Yeah, now he's in charge of the whole country, so that's kind of how that's working out. It's a very different game out here. So swerve over to all this stuff with Putin. Why? I mean, is anybody actually opposing having a little Cold War with him?
I don't think so.
I mean, do we have to sell that very hard?
There are different levels of willingness to impose hardships on different countries' own people, like Germany with their energy and things like that. But they've come along a fair bit, and the more we can hurt the economy of Russia, and cut off goods and services to the economy of Russia, the better off we are.
So what do you think about the funding for Ukraine? Where are you kind of, where would you come down on that?
I think that we need to continue to help them. I don't think we should sell them armaments that can go into Russia. I think we need to offer Russia a way out of this thing, which is, look, we haven't given them armaments that will go into Russia. And if you'll come to the table, we can maybe agree not to allow Ukraine into NATO or the EU or whatever for a period of time, and maybe have a standoff where Putin can win something and move on.
Yeah, I people are starting to look at the price tag on this whole thing with Ukraine and just sort of, and you look what's going on in the country and you think, well, how much money do we need to give these guys?
Well, I don't think they'd have a problem giving Ukraine money and arms if they could be accountable. But I think there's a accounting problem with that. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, the Ukraine's been very corrupt. There's no doubt about it. That's why Trump held up those Javelin sales for 2 years until they could kind of sort out the graft and corruption at their borders. But I would argue that if we let Putin win there, the price will be a lot higher for us down the road. Because he's already said what he wants to do. He wants to take a lot of other countries. He wants to build back the Iron Curtain. And this is the beachhead that we have to stop him at.
Yeah. Well, do you see it going anywhere? I mean, what's the...
Well, I mean, I think that if Ukraine can continue doing what they're doing, it's kind of a contest of attrition here. Who's going to wear out first?
Yeah. Yeah, who's going to kill off all their people?
Putin would just as soon kill every Ukrainian and go in and have a country with no people. That would suit him just fine. All he wants is the territory.
Yeah. And do you think there's a point where he would stop? I mean, just looking at, you know, personality and that whole thing. I mean, is he the kind of guy who would pull the plug? Because I don't think he would.
No, I don't think he'll stop unless we come up with some way for him to have a way out where he gets some kind of victory. He's going to keep fighting. He doesn't care about his people or the Ukrainians. He'll keep chewing them up. And that is, by the way, a problem with all these authoritarian rulers. They don't respect their people, and they will use them. Hitler used them. Stalin used them. This guy will use them.
What about the funding? I mean, I think some of the European nations are you know, with oil sales and whatnot, can we do anything there as far as cutting back on his funding? I think that would tap him a little bit to find a way out.
Well, if it was up to me, I would just say no Russian oil sold in Europe, not at 60 euros, not at nothing. I'd
right.
say hell with you.
Yeah.
Go sell your oil to the Japanese and the Chinese and the Indians, or basically Chinese and Indians and Iranians. Forget it. And I think that the best lever that we have is to cut them off from Western goods, kill off their oligarchs, take all their properties, and make them feel the pain for his outrageous behavior.
Yeah.
So if you're a rich Russian and you've been driving around in a Chevrolet or a Mercedes, how are you going to like going back to a Lada?
Yeah. Well, I understand a lot of the oligarchs are getting kind of bumped off when they disagree with him. Is that truth to that?
There's been some of that. And so what?
Yeah.
Whichever way we lose them, I don't care if they get bumped off or if we take all
the votes. Wait a minute, you're the ambassador to the Vatican. Does the Pope know you talk like that?
Well, the Pope is a bit of a different problem, okay? I mean, he first came out and brought into this mantra that because we expanded NATO, we were complicit in making Putin feel at risk. And that's totally ridiculous. And I wrote an op-ed about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he's trying to walk it back now, the Pope is.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
He's pretty quiet about it. It's a quiet walk.
Yeah, but he's been saying things like, well, you know, Putin's a, you know, Russia. He won't say Putin directly, but he says Russia is an aggressor and whatnot.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like this thing, we're at that part where it has no beginning, no end, no highs, no lows. It's just one big long, you know.
Yeah. From a Vatican point of view, we would have been much better off to have a Pope Benedict who would have lashed out at this guy for what he was from day one.
You think he would have done that?
Oh, yeah. He did it a lot. He did it with Kabila in the Congo. He did it with Ahmadinejad. He did it in Nicaragua. You know, the whole bit.
When you were doing the ambassador job, was it what you thought it would be?
Well, I really didn't know what it was going to be. I mean, the State Department tries to prepare you for the issues that are involved, but until you get over there and hear from them, you don't really know what they're thinking. No, it was great because, as the Pope told me, we want to work with the Western world to make the world a safer place. And that means saying some hard things in countries that have bad governments. Mm-hmm. And he was willing to do that. Nicaragua, Congo, Iran,
yeah, Ethiopia. And that's all kind of stopped. He's pretty, they're pretty quiet about it now. They I don't know. Yeah. Seem to
This guy here is not really focused on the global diplomacy. I don't know what he's focused on.
He's been pretty quiet. I guess when he was speaking out, I was kind of like, "Oh, please shut up!" And then he did. Now it's like he's kind of a non-player on the world stage. And honestly, I know we've talked to you about this before, but the Pope has a really great opportunity to be a player on the world stage, a powerful player.
Of course, but this guy didn't seem to get it. And when he did speak up, he spoke up and fumbled. Okay, like the thing about Putin and NATO.
Yeah,
and I don't think his mindset is about global nation building and diplomacy. I think his mindset is like poor people in Argentina.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to say, it seems to be focused on, you know, everybody needs more and you people have too much and just the whole socialist thing.
It's the whole liberation theology. Us Western world types have too much and we should give it all to some people who don't.
And do you think that comes from him or does that come from his advisors?
Both. I mean, he spent his life riding on a bus in Argentina. You know, if you read Father Gustavo Gutierrez's book about liberation theology, it is not nearly as political as it's been turned into by these liberal priests. He was talking about helping poor people and trying to liberate them from their poverty. It wasn't political at all. But it's been turned into like a political movement that the Western world owes them, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's a professor at Notre Dame, Father Gutierrez.
Oh, okay. And where is, you know, I was thinking about it yesterday, Pope Benedict retired. We've never had one, Pope retire that I know of.
No. And does Gregory the 12th or something like that.
Yeah, not somebody who would impact us. So where is he? And do you have any?
He's living on the Vatican Gardens in a place called the Ethiopian College, which is a 4 or 5 story apartment house that some ex Vatican people live in. And Kathleen and I and the kids went over to see him. I went over to talk to the diplomatic corps about my book, The Global Vatican. And so I wrote the Pope, and I said, "Hey, we're coming over. We talked about the book. You have time to visit us?" And so he wrote back and said, "Of course." So we went over and met with him. Had a great visit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
back
fun.
2012 or something. Huh. He looked great. He was so relieved not to be Pope.
that's gotta be just a huge responsibility and undertaking for anybody. But he had to know what he was getting into.
Yeah, but his health wasn't very good. I mean, none of these guys. Pope John Paul was an exercise nut. He used to go mountain climbing and skiing and all that kind of stuff. But by and large, most of these guys don't ever get any exercise in their whole life.
Yeah, that's true. And he was really, really active. He would have been, it would have been interesting to see him operate in the theater of today, I think.
Oh, yeah. John Paul?
Yeah.
He would be going after Russia like crazy.
Yeah.
He couldn't stand those guys.
Yeah, he would have been, I think, very vocal, and he would have been he would have insinuated himself as a major player in that that whole thing. So who else over there do you think has a lot of influence that maybe we don't hear about that much?
Well, I think Cardinal Parolin, the Secretary of State, has a lot of influence, but I think he's kind of muffled by the Pope's lack of interest in foreign policy engagement. But if he would let Cardinal Parolin engage, he's a really smart guy. He does understand the world.
Yeah. And what, as far as Putin goes, what do you think he wants to see, or what could we influence him to do to put an end to this? Is there anything that, I mean, reasonable that we could do that would kind of bring an end to this?
Well, the only thing I've really thought about that would be acceptable to us would be, we say, okay, you keep Crimea, and we will agree not to let the Ukraine in NATO or EU, and you leave. You leave the whole eastern side of the Donbass and all that stuff.
Yeah, because that's his biggest fear, I think, is Ukraine joining NATO, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, it would be nice to get Crimea back, too, and I don't think Zelensky will ever quit fighting unless we go beyond Zelensky and have the Western countries, France, Germany, us, UK, Spain, whatever, meet with Putin directly.
Yeah.
You're not going to get there with Zelensky.
No, he's not going to give an inch.
Well, he wouldn't be a rock star anymore. He wouldn't be getting, you know, he wouldn't have as much power. He'd just be a guy in a relatively small country. Why do you think it is that they're just ignoring the fact that he's cutting off the media, cutting off, you know, political parties, you know, the money's not really being audited? What's your guess on why he's getting away with that?
I think we're probably giving him too much sway there. I would like to see a little more aggressive American government dealing with him, saying, okay, you want more weapons? Talk to us about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, Donald Trump did that. Donald Trump did not give them the javelins for 2 years until they theoretically improved on their corruption on the border, although I'm not really sure they did. I mean, that's kind of a cultural issue.
How many of these weapons that we're shipping over there do you think are really ending up in other folks' hands?
No, I think they're ending up in the right hands. It's just how much money trades hands to get them there.
Hmm. Yeah, because I was listening to some stories here not too long ago where there was quite a black market on a lot of the weapons that we were supplying. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but if that's the case, I think there definitely needs to be an audit, and maybe that's why you know, they're not too keen to that idea.
Well, I hope not. I haven't seen any weapons deployed by anybody that, other than us and the Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the Ukrainians, so.
Right.
Yeah,
so if they're being absconded, they're being hid out. They're not being used yet.
Yeah, somebody's getting quite the stash. I don't know. It's difficult because the longer it goes and the more you hear the same thing, the same thing, the same thing, people start to wonder, and then he's, you know, on the cover of Vogue, and he's on the cover of Time, and blah, 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 and the guys, it's like, wait a minute, you know, we're not looking to make some kind of weird global rock star guy, like, we'd like to win this thing, be done with it, and get out, but...
Yeah, and the fundamental issues of corruption are still there.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The same people are at the border, shaking things down, coming in. They may not be able to shake down our weapons that are flown in directly to the government. I don't know. But it's a corrupt place, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It's an imperfect democracy.
Yeah. So you look at the amount and the fact that it's never going, you know, that never seems to end. I guess that's the other part of it. And the Biden administration seems to not have any interest in brokering any sort of closure. But
that's
hey,
a problem.
But they, hey, they Christmas is right around the corner.
Some kind of closure.
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a really quick break. And Christmas is right around the corner. So who knows? Maybe we'll get a present for Christmas. I thought I'd play us some fun Christmas music.
On a, but instead, it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and the distant choir, the peal of a bell on that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire. I wish you a brave new year. All anguish, pain, and sadness, lead your heart and let your road be clear. They said there'd be snow at Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be heaven on earth. The Christmas we get, we deserve.
See, it had a good ending. The Christmas we get, we deserve. I think many decades later, Greg Lake might have been onto something. Maybe Putin will get the Christmas he deserves. It'd be nice if we could help give it to him, though. Hey, so Ambassador, in your article, you talk about the swift banking and seizing assets of Putin and all that. Can you give us a little more? Like, how would that work?
Well, I think we've done a pretty good job of cutting them off, at least with the way the SWIFT banking works is that's the network that takes money from one country through other countries and gets it to the destination country, whether it's Europe or U.S. or whatever. And I think we pretty well cut them out of that. I think there's still more things that we could do. And if it were me, I wouldn't do the $60 or 60 euro price. I would just say, uh-uh. No Russian oil goes to Europe. Period. In the paragraph.
Do you think the measures we've taken so far with the SWIFT banking has really punished them much? Because I understand their economy is still doing pretty good.
I don't know how their economy is doing. I think it's hurt them. They've had to go around it. But if we were to cut off all of the oil going to Europe, that would mean that the price would probably go down for China and India, and Saudi Arabia and the Arabs would fill the gap to Europe. That'd be fine. It'd be a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And let them develop their own trading block. We almost have a new Iron Curtain developing between India, to some degree, certainly Iran, and certainly Russia and China. We'll let them have it.
So you think India is on the side of Russia or just a good customer?
India is always India. They're always conflicted, right?
Right.
I mean, going back to Gandhi, they're socialists. They have affinity for Russia. They have not behaved all that great recently. We'll see how they do. But yeah, they have some tendencies towards democracy and capitalism that are pushing them against Russia.
Right. And as far as Russia goes, their only real export is oil, isn't it?
Yeah. That's all they got.
Yeah.
I mean, down in Georgia and Ukraine, you got wheat. But up in Russia, it's pretty much oil.
Right.
Well, now that
we have plenty of that, you know, the United States and Argentina, United States and Colombia make the Western Hemisphere energy independent. And if Biden would stop screwing that up, we could take advantage of it. We were before Biden came in.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that and this is none of us I probably will ever know, but what's your guess? Do you think it's just ideology, or do you think they just I mean, you think they just want to collapse us? Is it malicious or just stupid?
Biden?
Yeah.
I think he's become, first of all, this guy was a moderate Democrat for 40 years.
Right.
And he got in office, and he's become a radical captive of the progressive left. And he's done all this strange stuff. It's like, we don't want any fossil fuels. We don't want any pipelines. And none of it makes any sense at all. Because no matter how much you care about alternate energy, and I think alternate energy is a great thing, you're going to have to burn a lot of natural gas and oil for a long time to get there.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, how stupid are these environmentalists that they'll say, oh, no pipelines. Indians don't want them or something. Well, the fact of the matter is, we're transporting all of the oil and natural gas by rail cars, which leak methane, pollute, and sometimes even have wrecks. Pipelines don't have any of those problems.
Yeah, and I don't think the Indians are all that much against it now, are they?
Well, maybe the ones they paid, you know, to go up there to those Keystone Pipeline protests who didn't live anywhere near the pipeline.
Yeah. That was kind of an amazing thing. Well, it's kind of like all the people who want to take out the Klamath Dams. Everyone who's invited but the people who live there who voted 79% on an advisory measure not to take the dams out. They didn't invite any of them either. I think it's kind of a standard thing they do.
But there's nothing they can do. There's two things they can't have nothing control over. They have no control over the fact that 90% of our energy is fossil fuels. We can work against it. We can build alternatives, but we're going to have fossil fuels for a long time. So they should embrace that and work constructively to reduce fossil fuels and move to alternates. Okay. The next thing is China and India. Our emissions are down 6% in the last year. China's are up 20. Until we stop China and India from burning coal, we're dropping the bucket.
Yeah. Yep.
And now, with all these disruptions in Europe, guess what's happening? Germany, France, et al.,
yeah.
They're reopening their coal plants.
Yep, they're going back. I think they realize. Yeah. And
they're like, oh, we don't want to really kill our entire population. That's probably not going to go over well.
Oh, their economies
are... The cleanest coal is 7 to 8 times more CO2 and methane-centric than the natural gas. Natural gas is the answer, and we in the United States have more of it than we will ever be able to use. We should be exporting it all over, LNG everywhere.
There's just no sense in what they're doing at all. There's no good. I think what they want to do is they want to replace it and then worry about the cost rather than develop the technology as you go. And replace it, you know, as technology allows. But we're not there yet. I mean, wind and solar is not going to replace fossil fuels without collapsing
so
the economy.
If you said an edict tomorrow, no more combustion engines, all electric, guess what? You're going to have a lot more natural gas-fired electric plants to supply the power for that.
Right.
These guys are toolblock at every step.
Right. Well, they just shut down. What was it? The Jeep Cherokee plant shut down because it's too expensive to make the plant that makes the EVs shut down because they're too expensive to make. I mean,
yeah,
it's that you're going to see that. I mean, that's why Germany is going back to coal. You just can't afford it. The people won't stand for it.
See, and I'll tell you, back in 2002, President Bush, I was involved in this, tried to get Germany focused on LNG as an alternative to Russian gas. And the Schroeder guy wouldn't hear of it. And come to find out, Schroeder, after he leaves being president of Germany, goes on the board of the biggest Russian oil and gas company, Rosneft. You talk about corrupt.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's unbelievable. What do you think about the nitrogen technology that they're playing with now? Do you think that'll ever go anywhere?
I don't know about nitrogen. I know about this green hydrogen.
Hydrogen, excuse me.
Green hydrogen has some real promise.
Yeah. Yeah, that to me makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's mm-hmm. no, basically, the only emission is water, and I think it's fairly cheap to produce, isn't it?
Yeah, they figured out how to make it not so combustible. I think there's a lot of promise.
Yeah. I can't remember which I think it was Japan was kind of leading the charge on that. They were developing some hydrogen vehicles that I don't know, looked pretty good.
Yeah. Could be an alternative to batteries.
Yeah, because the battery thing, I think that's going to come crashing down here pretty quick. We just don't have any of the natural resources required to build batteries.
That's the problem. It takes so many heavy metals that we don't mm-hmm. have.
Yeah, and we don't have
bad
them.
Bad countries do have them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then you build them, and you need new batteries, and your car's a throwaway.
Yeah.
I
think the green nitrogen has got a really... or green hydrogen's got a good opportunity.
Yeah, I think so too. And I'm not sure why we're not. If we have to pursue something, let's pursue something that is feasible.
But we're still going to be burning a lot of oil and a lot of natural gas for a long time.
Oh, sure.
We might as well embrace it and get with the program.
Yeah, and that's become such a clean technology after all these years.
I used to be on the board of a company that did a lot of exploration in the Permian, and we used compressed natural gas for our fracking power plants instead of diesel. We recycled all of our water. We basically were a zero emission fracking operation.
Wow. And where was that?
Glasscock County, Permian, in the Permian Basin.
Hmm.
That's kind of interesting. So, while you're watching all this, you're just pulling your hair out.
Well, yeah, because it's so irrational. I mean, we are going to have fossil fuels. Let's figure out how to use them the best way to make transitions to newer technologies. Don't put your head in the sand.
Right.
Because when you put your head in the sand, what do you get? Coal. And coal is super dirty.
Yeah. Yeah, as much as you clean it up, I mean, there's still emissions there.
There is no such thing as clean coal. That is totally a distractive narrative of the coal industry.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
natural gas is much cleaner.
Yeah. Yeah, and why, any sense of why they would have a beef with natural gas other than that it's abundant and it would keep the prices down and they couldn't, roll us on it?
Well, obviously the coal industry doesn't like natural gas because it takes them out. But the liberals seem to... the progressives, if you will, seem to just have this myopic view that we can't have anything. It's zero-sum game. And life is not a zero-sum game.
Right.
Life is a game of increments.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so many of them live in these cities and have no idea where things come from. You know, they don't know where anything comes from. My favorite was a guy from up here. He had lead. He had a big chunk of lead. Just in the ground at his ranch, and they were banning lead. You know, they wanted to ban lead in bullets because it was killing the birds. It's toxic, and so he went down to the Capitol with this big chunk of lead, and went into the guy's office, and he put it down on his desk. And the guy's like, "What's that?" He goes, "It's lead." And the guy like jumps out of his chair. He's a legislator, a grown man, jumps out of his chair. "Well, where'd you get that?" He said, "From my ranch. Comes out of the ground." Where did you think it came from? And the guy actually thought it came from a factory. Obviously, not super familiar with the periodic table. That's how term limits are working for us in California. We're getting obviously smarter and smarter people, obviously, as we cycle them out quicker and quicker.
Well, term limits are the key.
Yeah, well, it's what's giving us people that think lead comes from a factory. So, I don't know. I'm not a fan. We don't have any historical knowledge under the dome and of their head
so
or under the dome of the Capitol.
You and damned if you don't.
Yeah, it's
you
true.
You either have a new person because of term limits that doesn't know anything. You have an old person because of no term limits is so set in and bought off by lobbyists and set into their ideologies that they're not constructive.
Yeah, but then you look at what's the factor that we haven't that we don't touch. And that we can't touch through either of those mechanisms, and that's the bureaucrats. and they're there for 30 years. And that's who's really crushing us. If you look at California policy that's completely crazy, it's the bureaucrats driving it.
It's the same in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, exactly.
They wait out the political people.
Yep, they figure, oh, they'll be gone. So, you know, well, yep, nope. And then that guy will be gone. I can do what I want, which is just, I don't know. I mean, what do you say about that? It's, I think people just really are going to have to do more homework and take a look at.
And we may reach a peak point in this country where our standard of living is starting to decline so much.
Yeah.
That China is about to overtake us.
Yep, and people
that
will.
Europe doesn't really care about us.
Pipe up.
And maybe we'll reach a peak point. I just hope that we do it in a democratic manner with elected people.
Yeah, I hope so too. Ambassador Rooney, thank you so much for spending your Sunday afternoon with us. I'm sure we will speak with you again soon. Have a great time in Florida. Be free.
We got miles to feed.
But I still believe what makes a man really has a chance. You've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Never compromise what's right and uphold your family name. You've got to stand for something.
Well, welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio, and I thought that was the perfect song for our guest this hour. We're switching it up. So we went from the ambassador to the Vatican. Now we're going to talk about environmental policy. We kind of did last hour a little bit. I didn't realize we were going to do that, but I think, just spoiler alert, I picked out my favorite songs that I chose with our guest, Debbie Bacigalupi, so you're going to like them. All right, so Bill, what's our sponsor of the hour?
Well, our number one sponsor right now is Pappy Machinery.
Love those guys.
Yeah, they do a great job up there. They're on Twin View Boulevard, 3119 Twin View Boulevard. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer, and they'll take care of pretty much anything tractor-wise you have. They do part sales and service up there for John Deere. Got a great inventory right now. Go up and see them. Or give them a call, 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And don't forget the 530 on your 226-9226, because that's just a big pain in the rear that we all have now. We have to do the 530, or you get Ecuador or New Guinea or something. I had to call somebody the other day, and all of a sudden it popped up, and I thought, oh, man, calling another country again. Forgot my 530. Oh, my goodness. So we've done some shows with Debbie in the past. And I tell you what, it never ends. She'll never be bored. So let's see. I've got some bio information. If I could read it, I made it really small. Not helpful. She was born in Reading. Mm-hmm. So she's a... I mean, neither of us were born in Reading. So, Debbie, you should be down here doing this. She's a sixth-generation California. Her family is fifth generation cattle ranchers and farmers in Siskiyou County. And because of the attack on rural America and the effect on her family, she decided to jump into the 2012 congressional race against Jackie Speer down there in the 14th district. Jackie is a career politician in an 80% Democrat registered Bay Area. You know how that race turned out. She's worked as a corporate event planner for Google and YouTube. Currently, she's a biotech consultant and a speaker. And as a speaker for private property rights and now a key player in the anti-agenda task force group, Agenda 21 task force group. She does a lot of things on Agenda 21. And I remember back when we all first met each other, nobody even knew what that was. And now it's Agenda 2030, so you better get with the program if Agenda 21 doesn't mean anything to you.
Yeah.
Now they've changed the name, so you'll have to do a little quick study. You can You can find actually a lot of information on our website.
Is that because Agenda 21 didn't pan out? Or?
Oh, no, I'm sure that's not it.
No.
No, they just wanted a snazzier name.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, 30 is much snazzier.
Yeah, yeah, 2030. Well, yeah. It's kind of like Al Gore's book, you know, the inconvenient mistakes, like all his inconvenient dates were pretty inconvenient because they didn't work out.
None of them came true.
Nothing actually happened.
Yeah.
Now the world's ending. Oh, whoops. Nope, got that wrong again.
Well, we've only got what? 8 years left on our 12-year plan of
Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah.
When we end the world.
Yeah.
Guess I'll, you know, stop watching what I eat and everything. Yeah. So we've been doing shows with Debbie since 2012. My Environmental Regulations Consume California was our first show we did with her, and it's never changed. So, Debbie, you just got back from Egypt to go to a climate conference. God bless you. Somebody's got to go. They're out there rubbing shoulders with the Al Gore and the rest of the numbskulls. So, I mean, to ask how was it, it seems like a bad question, but how was it?
Oh, my gosh. It's always the belly of the beast, I'm telling you. I did not run into Al Gore this time. Normally I do, and I'm pretty sure the guy knows who I am because he'll be happily shaking hands as he walks through, you know, the sea parts and the people part, and he's got this beautiful aisleway that's created for him wherever he goes at these conferences. And then he gets to me, and I'm not kidding, I've got this on camera several times. It's like wah wah wah, and oh, there she is again. So I've run into him. I've asked him tough questions in Sundance at the Sundance Film Festival. I asked him about the 10-year tipping point. And his answer to me was, meanwhile, I'm not kidding, it is blizzarding snow. We call it the Al Gore effect. So usually when he shows up to these conferences, no joke, somehow the weather shifts. And I'm not kidding. It's like clockwork. And so I asked him about the 10-year tipping point because he has been forewarning about the 10-year tipping point for decades now. So that's 10 years, over 10 years, over 10 years, decades now. He's been warning about the 10-year tipping point, which means it's kind of like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or I call her Alexandria Communist-Cortez, keeps saying, you know, we only have 10 more years left till the year 2030. You know, she was saying that along with a whole bunch of other people. This is like the 10-year tipping point. If you don't act now, and if you do not have the political will, life, not my quote, theirs, life will be uninhabitable and unrecognizable unless we start living a sustainable development lifestyle, we stop being racist, we repair the harms that we've done in the past. And if we do all those things and we act more gently on planet Earth, then climate change will be solved. I mean, it won't be totally solved, but at least we'll be able to turn the global thermostat down enough that we don't have to worry about catastrophic wildfires and catastrophic floods and all the things that are happening now that are catastrophic, that are supposedly because you and I do not live a sustainable lifestyle. We eat meat. We drink alcohol. We
what?
Live on private property.
Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. Do you know, Debbie, do we still have a polar ice cap? Because that was supposed to be...
Oh, yeah, that was gone, too.
Yeah, that was supposed to be gone like 10 years ago.
You know, the polar bears are coming back.
Of course they are.
Know. Yeah.
So as far as them being a role model for anthropogenic global warming, you're starting to see the polar bears come back in the propaganda. So, you know, and here's, okay, so you said something about the Agenda 21. Agenda 21 never went away. It's a 100-year plan for the 21st century, a.k.a. United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. That is the official name that was promulgated out of a United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change back in 1992 in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, where our former governor, Jerry Brown, at the time was running for president. he was at this Rio Earth Summit. Nancy Pelosi was at this Rio Earth Summit. Al Gore was at the Rio Earth, first Rio Earth Summit. George Herbert Walker Bush was there. In fact, he gave millions and millions, I think it was $50 million, which was a lot back then in 1992, of United States taxpayer dollars over to the United Nations for the United Nations Biological Diversity Conference and the Framework Convention on Climate Change. So we have been, the United States has been a part of this process for, since way before 1992, but dedicated to, dedicated meaning every year we're dedicating more and more money, taxpayer dollars, towards this effort to blame human beings, especially colonialism, on the despairs of planet Earth. So Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century. I like to say it's an agenda to one world government system, like Agenda 21 world government system. And the 2030 agenda is only the first 30 years of that 100-year plan. Because if you look into your local area, you probably have plans like the 2040 plan or the 2050 plan or Tri-Counties 2050 or whatever. So that proves that the 2030 plan is not replaced Agenda 21. It's just the first 30 years, super aggressive 30 years of the 100-year plan. The 30 years, the 2030 agenda, has 17 sustainable development goals, all created by the United Nations and partnering countries, including the United States. And within those 17 sustainable development goals under the 2030 agenda are 169 targets. What do those things include? Like no hunger, no poverty, consumerism, sustainable development consumerism. Climate change is number 13 of those 17 sustainable development goals. And number 6, which is an uber important one, sustainable development goal number 6, is all about water and ecosystems. Right now, the United Nations is hosting what is called COP15 of the Biological Diversity Conference, and it is in Montreal. I went to COP27 of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. I know all this, like, jargon. And there are two different conference of parties, meaning the Biological Diversity Conference, which is super important to America and super important to California, because what it says is that we are losing, based on climate change and anthropogenic global warming and human being impact, we are losing massive biodiversity, massive wildlife loss. We're talking, they're saying, extinction. So right now, Wade Crowfoot, if you're from California and you're listening to this, Wade Crowfoot is right now in Montreal. He is, I think, the director or the secretariat or whatever, appointed by Gavin Newsom. He's been with Gavin Newsom for decades now at various capacities. But he is, and so has his wife, who's an attorney. He is right now in Montreal at this United Nations Biological Diversity Convention on Biological Diversity Conference, as well as Dr. Jen Norris, who's also with California Resources Department. And so what are they doing? They are doing treaties with one another. They are making deals with one another. And they're also there to say how California is leading the way on biodiversity. And if you think about it, sorry, I'm on this, like, long soliloquy, you guys.
That's okay. You have 2 minutes till the commercial. Keep going.
Okay. So if you think about it, what Gavin Newsom, his executive order, if you've heard about this, if you haven't, you should. If you have, you know what it is, or you should be concerned, is the 30 by 30 rule, that by the year 2030, 30% of California's land will be protected through various mechanisms. And so think about this. And then Biden did the same thing months later on a national level. And if you look up the 30 by 30 program, and COP15 in Montreal right now, you see that this is an international agenda to globally protect 30% more land by the year 2030. So you have this massive, massive movement And just let's just narrow down to California. The government in California only has so much land. So they've already got it protected. So if they're going to get 30% more land in California to protect, to stop climate change, whose land do you think they're going after? What land are they going after? Because the government already owns what the government owns. So this is a total land grab of sorts. They may not take your property, but that what they're going to do is use codes and regulations and conservation easements to protect what they call the hottest biodiversity spots in California, which California is considered the seventh most biodiverse place in the entire world. So California, in many ways, not just with the Klamath River Dam destruction project, but also with cap and trade, and now with the 30 by 30 plan, and also biodiversity conservation and conservation easement, is leading the way in so many facets. That's why California and China are often referred to as the pilot for these United Nations conferences, whether it's the biodiversity conference or climate change conferences. So California, we're it. And you know, I always think that, you know, if the devil's going to go to work on God's greatest creation, he certainly is doing it on California. So we need to buckle up and get our boots on the ground and really start working together to either expose, you know, Aaron and Bill, expose what they're up to in hopes that more people, you know, are educated and making better decisions for themselves based on the truth that we're trying to expose, or they get really active and run for office and do things like that to start locally turning the tide on this massive, massive.
Well, yeah, because all the people who think, well, this probably isn't going to affect me, you're going to pay for it. Bottom line, mm-hmm. you're going to pay for it. And so it is going to affect you. There's no way out. So we've got to take a quick break. We have to inject some levity. And so we're going to let Ray Stevens do that for us.
Embarking upon a new career, capitalizing on this global warming hype. Yeah, they're the ones that brought you the left-handed hammer and tried to market a recycled pamper. You could say the Gullible brothers have always been the entrepreneurial type. But this next harebrained Gullible venture could be earmarked as the major clincher as to whether or not they'll be living it up in their retirement age. They put all they had into one bankroll, bought a bunch of land down at the South Pole, eagerly awaiting the impending doom of climate change. Thereby being in the catbird seat in the new Florida. And I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean. But man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms.
I look at you now, see a temperature rising, while mighty glaciers weep. I look at you now, see your oceans arising, while nations are lost in the deep.
Here it comes.
I don't know why.
Keep your day job.
Nobody told you.
Cats in a bag.
They stole and fooled you.
I can't even see that bad.
Remember, don't you remember you and I found that online? We were sitting in our kitchen before some show we did on this stuff, when mighty glaciers weep.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's in my environmental playlist.
I'm crying right now.
I know. I was crying last night, and I still had more left. Yeah, you know, when you hear stuff like that, you're like, wow, really? And they've hoodwinked, like, the whole planet?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I can't sing. I can't sing.
Well, neither can he, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, is it a he? I don't even know.
Oh, well, that's a point to ponder.
Because, you know, in this world, anything goes.
That's true. What are his pronouns? He should go by a fake name, actually, because that's really quite horrible.
Yeah, agreed. So are the decisions. I'll just jump in.
Yeah.
So I did just get back from Egypt. And what happened in Egypt, and why should anyone care, especially in the United States? What happened at the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change in Sharm el-Sheikh, we're calling Sharm el-Shakedown, because that's pretty much what it is a shakedown of the American economic system. But is at this conference of parties number 15 or 27? I'm sorry, 15 is the biological diversity conference. So at the number 27, which means there are 26 previous conferences prior to that, all leading up to, and this is no joke, it's no exaggeration, in any stretch of the mean, is that we are heading to a global governance system. I mean, they talk about globalization on the news all the time, so it should, at this point, be of no surprise to anyone. And so Biden was at this conference. Nancy Pelosi was at this conference in Sharm el-Shakedown. John Kerry, Al Gore, and many, many others from the United States. And what they were doing is what they do every year at these conferences. These conferences are 33,000 people who are flying in, lots of private jets, lots of black cars, you know, fancy, shiny, clean black cars with flags of whatever countries, meaning it's somebody of high level coming in, and they're always escorted by many, many police cars and motorcycles with, you know, the horns going and the lights going, and then they arrive, and it's like the seas part again for them, and everybody, you know, the media is there to take pictures, and it really is this kind of Hollywood paparazzi kind of thing in the climate change world. And so you have 33,000 people every year showing up to these conferences to kind of, it's like a confab, and they're getting together to make deals, to talk about business decisions. If you're an exhibitor, so you have massive amounts of exhibitors at these conferences. If you've ever been to a trade show of any size, imagine a trade show for 33,000 people and all the equipment that has to be brought in this kind of empty warehouse. In fact, they had to create in Sharm el-Sheikh, which is a resort town, a resort area in the desert on the Red Sea. It's got beautiful resorts. In fact, there's a Four Seasons that John Kerry stayed at, who is the climate change envoy under Barack Obama and now Joe Biden, meaning he's the guy who makes these climate change deals. You know, John Kerry is married to, I think he's still married to, Teresa Hines, very, very wealthy family, right? He was staying at the Four Seasons hotel that we heard from another hotel was charging him $7,500 a night. That's your taxpayer dollars, $7,500 times 14 nights at least. That's not including his staff, his security, his private planes, his helicopter ride, none of that. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars just spent on one human being, United States taxpayer dollars, to go into this conference to make a deal with the other conference goers. So there's 196 countries that are involved in these conferences to make deals with each other. And the deal that they made was called loss and damages. And you may hear of the term loss and damages in another term, Aaron and Bill, called reparations.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah. Big popular, big in popularity these days.
Yeah, so recently, Aaron, you were telling me not too long ago about, just to give an example of what reparations, there's a reparations going on in California. Can you tell us what that is, just to give people an idea of what reparations, what kind of reparations there can be?
I don't have the detail on it, but the gist of it is they've set up a reparations, like, panel or whatever, but it's billions of dollars that they're talking about giving to people who, I guess, they're brown and came from, I don't even know if they have to come from California, but they were talking like $233,000 per individual, which was going to exceed the budget of California. I mean,
yeah, and it's supposed to repair.
I'll look it up while we're talking.
Yeah, it's supposed to, these reparations, and that's a great example because it's coming straight from the taxpayer dollars in California, and they're thinking about it. They're coming up with a budget. They're coming up with ways that this is going to get paid out to calm the anxiety of the past, to repair the damage that was done in the past to people of color, according to certain people's, you know, account of history. So even if you were not a slave, but you are a color of slavery, which I guess is black, but I also know there were Chinese
slaves. Well, they've written a 500-page study. Here, I just popped this up so it'd be current. California's first in the nation task force to identify reparations said business loans, housing grants, tuition, wage and job protections could provide redress for African Americans. The 500-page study describes decades of state and federal government actions, blah, blah, blah. And it just, it's going to be massive. I mean, it's massive. Just do a little teeny search, and if you think it couldn't come to your state, you know, you're kind of like, those Californians, what a bunch of idiots. It's like, laugh now, but we love to export our bad policy.
And this is part and parcel with the climate change Agenda 21 reparations. So Agenda 21 is social equity, environmental justice, and economic justice. And the reparations on slavery here in California cover two of those, social equity and economic justice. Of the three that are under Agenda 21, which the third one, again, is environmental justice. So at this COP27 in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, what John Kerry and Joe Biden signed the American people, the American taxpayer, onto was something called loss and damages. In other words, anything related to climate change, whether it's social equity, environmental justice, and economic justice, that they can say, hey, because of colonialism, because of capitalism, because America, and they say this, the United States of America is the biggest polluter. Guys, that is a lie. But they're saying it. China is the biggest polluter, but China, in these agreements, is still considered a developing country, where the United States is considered a developed country. So why that is, I don't know, but I think it gives a pass to the Chinese Communist Party with this climate change propaganda. They get a pass on all the reparations. So what does the reparation look like under climate change, loss and damages? Imagine a third world nation, as an island nation, let's say, is flooded from, you know, some tropical storm that is caused by capitalism and anthropogenic global warming and pollution. We pay, you guys.
Yeah.
We pay. And so they're setting up these huge funds right now. And how they're going to fund these is still questionable. It's still, what John Kerry and Joe Biden and many, many, many others in Washington, D.C. and states like California are trying to set up through the stock market and this thing called, I'm kind of getting into the weeds, but just bear with me, with things like environmental social governance. You're hearing about ESG everywhere,
ESG, yeah,
all the time. All these things are leading to one thing, which is wealth redistribution. Just like, you know, Aaron, the one that you told me about here in California and the reparations for slavery, it's all about wealth redistribution.
Yep. And yep. How dare you have anything? And you know, just so we don't deprive anybody of the madness, you can we put some links up for you at wethepeopleradio.us that I've been kind of bad about not saying during our show today, which is not good. But some links at the bottom of the page. Today is December 11th, 2022, in case we replay this. At the bottom of that page, you have MorganCurtis.com. One quote I pulled off of that: I support people with inherited wealth to align their resources with their social justice values so that resources can flow to create the world we'd love to see.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Then there's the resourcegeneration.org. It's a multiracial membership community of young people 18 to 35 with wealth and or class privilege committed to equitable distribution of wealth and power. And just in case you're not sure if you're one of those people, you can go take the class privilege quiz, which I frankly thought was tons of fun. Very much enjoyed it. And I mean, you have an advanced degree. Your parents had an advanced degree. Your net worth is over $50,000. You have very little debt. Oh, so you're a good money manager. Well, you go on the class privilege quiz here, you lose. You inherited money from relatives who passed away. You expect someday to inherit money from relatives that passed away. One of the actual things you could check or not check is you're wondering whether you're wealthy or not. It's like, are you kidding?
You can't figure that out.
Your family owns land.
I guarantee you're not.
Exactly. Your family owns land. Yeah, I mean, all this stuff. So you click all this thing and you get to the bottom and it says you have class privilege. You know, and so you're supposed to figure out a way to give all your assets away so you can feel better about yourself.
Right. And what you're supposed to feel good. So what you're supposed to feel better about for yourself by giving away your wealth.
Yeah.
And what, you know, you earn.
Well, giving it to them so that, you know, you can feel better about yourself.
Right. And they go to social justice causes. They go to, you know, things that are supposed to repair. So here's what they say. And where Aaron got those websites is from a Harvard student who
I got him from you, who got him from Harvard student.
Right. Harvard student at the United Nations in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. And it was right after the big announcement. There was a press conference that I was a part of about the announcement of loss and damages. And Fridays for Future representatives, Fridays for Future, you can think Greta Thunberg, who started Fridays for Future. These young girls from Harvard were part of this press conference and other countries too. It wasn't just Harvard, and they were upset with the United States for not coming up with numbers, confirmed numbers, and also upset with the United States for not taking a bigger role in the pollution that we are supposedly launching across the globe that's causing so much damage and racial inequity and all these things that they tie together that have nothing to do with one another. But somehow racism is now and has been actually a part of climate change. And so if we could solve the climate change crisis, we could solve the racism crisis too, is what they propose. And so these, when I asked these, I was interviewing these young women and saying, well, gosh, I certainly as an American off of, you know, the backs of colonialism and slavery, I feel awful about what I've done and the wealth I've accumulated. And they're like, well, it's okay. It's okay. There's a way. And of course, I'm being facetious there. I'm sitting, you know, I'm egging these people on to tell me more and more. And they direct me to these websites saying, here, American people, we want you to check this stuff out. And this one Harvard student was from Austin, Texas, wanted me to check out and these websites and then figure out how I can start giving back whatever I have, whether it's a vehicle, whether it's, you know, money, whether it's land, give back so that we could repair the damages done in the past as being the United States of America, where wealth was, according to them, created off the backs of slavery and indigenous people and the harm reforms that were done, not as if any of that didn't happen anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, right.
And not as if any of that didn't happen within their own tribes, within their own communities.
Right.
Somehow, it's and I'm not kidding, it's up to white people and so-called colonials and supremacists to fix this problem by giving back their wealth so they can feel good about themselves. The
nice.
People that they're targeting are the millennials, the younger people. So what they're doing is...
Well, and they're the ones really a lot of times not yeah. having kids. And but, you know, it's funny. I think, frankly, they're too much about themselves to go live in poverty so they can feel good about the world. I think they'll just lean on the rest of us to do it. Well, they don't, because that's typically how that works, like Al Gore
and
the rest of them.
With any policy, there's always an exception. I mean, they should set up a website where you can apply for an exception to the rule. because I think there's lots of people out there that can say, hey, I never had a slave. My family never had slaves.
Well, look at all the people who were different nationalities. I mean, the Irish didn't have a very good go of it at the outset. We have to take a really quick break so that I can play two more of our favorite songs. So we have Stop Global Whining, which is just lovely, and then we'll come back with Dire Straits, one of their top ones that I love so much. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Crisis on the planet. It's heated up almost a whole degree. It hasn't been this hot in a long time. Not since the 16th century, when there were no evil SUVs. Stop global warming. It's up to you. The Earth's been heating up and cooling back down since the head out of the clouds.
Yeah, my party's all right. Uh-huh. Now don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days. Even the air, they're running out of rhinos. What do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphins. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment. We aim to be. And my party is alright. Uh-huh. Do what you please.
Yeah. The secret's in the cheese.
The secret's in the cheese.
Yeah.
Man, running out of nothing in my deep freeze. You're not running out of anything in yours, are you, Debbie? Do we lose her? Hello? Is she in the cone of silence?
Hi. No. I put myself on mute because I was laughing.
Because you're laughing's good. This is a serious topic. If you don't play silly music, then everybody's angry all the time. And, you know, it's Sunday afternoon, and it's getting close to Christmas. And, yeah, how much anger can you possibly stomach?
Yes, and I eat, breathe, and live it. I think that's why I'm so exhausted these days. But for all you out there, you don't have to study this stuff. You don't have to go down the rabbit hole, because we're telling you. You know, kind of bottom line, where all of this is leading to, which is our jobs being shifted over to China and manufacturing. I know some is coming back, but still manufacturing is going to China. China is not being blamed for the pollution, which they do cause. They don't have to pay reparations. And they, like California, are seen as the shining city, if you will, or a shining country on the hill when it comes to where we're heading in the 21st century. It's quite fascinating. It is absolutely fascinating that California and China are just uplifted and the models for the future. So that should tell you a lot, like perhaps maybe to research a little bit more about the ideology of our leaders. I don't think that's too far to guess. They lean definitely towards communism, socialism, and a one-world government system. And so it's like hang on for the ride, but at the same time, somehow you got to have fun and come together and unite. And I think that's where we will have fun, and fighting back and trying to turn things around is coming together. Before I forget, I just want to mention two things that were mentioned, as well as California and China. And one, repeatedly, was the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act at the conference. And then the other one was the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's something in those acts, which I have not read, that is major funding for this loss and damages and the agenda of the overall COPs, the climate change conferences. So maybe that could be, you know, a listener's, I don't know, maybe they'd be interested in finding out more about that. But for some reason, those two acts were repeated constantly by American delegates who were at the conference.
Well, you know, when they shut down the XL pipeline, all those workers were supposed to be retrained and get jobs in the new green energy field. That never happened, and I don't think it's ever going to happen, but they still magically assign quite a lot of money to that. I just wonder, what do they spend that money on?
Yeah. I bet you there are a lot of jobs that are being created, high net worth income jobs in some of these sectors when it comes to renewable energy. And so, you know, patting your friend's back, who's going to get you these grants and bills and whatever through Congress and passed in the Senate. I don't know. Aaron knows how.
Well, the one, you know, the one that I think really, you know, sticks in people's mind that, you know, I don't think the left tried to fight back on it, was Solyndra. Back under Obama. I think that was a real wake-up call for people who didn't even follow any of that. It was like, wait a second, we what? Give all this money to this, you know, solar company, and it was just a big scam.
Yeah. And they closed their doors as soon as they got the money.
But see, at the end of the day, all of this, it's important, you know, whether people know the details or not, it's all about scarcity. So if you can make resources scarce, you can control people, which is why we want to, I mean, and I'm using the term we very loosely, like it doesn't include any of us, but want to take out dams, why we want to stop oil production, why we want to do all those things. Because once that happens, you have scarce resource. And then, of course, you know, government needs to come in.
Yep, they need to come in and fix it.
Yep, meet it out.
Yeah,
well, decide how much you can have.
It's everything they warned us about, and now they
and now it's happening.
In. Yep, they got to come in and fix it.
So
yeah, you remember back in. Well, it was this statement. You'll remember who said this. We're just 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Mm.
Remember who said that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Barack Obama.
Yeah, Barack Obama.
In 2014, he was asked by, I think, NBC News in an exclusive interview what his legacy would be. And he said a carbon tax. So think about it, a carbon. So they don't say carbon dioxide. They say carbon. And that could mean anything. Carbon is the key element of life. Your bones have carbon. But if they're specifically talking about carbon dioxide, why don't we hear them say a carbon dioxide tax? Which you can't see carbon dioxide. You can't see it. I mean, maybe there's something that you could, I don't know, there's probably some experiment where you could see it and add color. But largely, you cannot see carbon dioxide. We breathe in oxygen. We breathe out carbon dioxide. So they want to control carbon dioxide, but you cannot see it. And we cannot see the air. I mean, you can't.
Well, it's also stuff that it's also the thing that makes plants grow. So
exactly.
If it's a big,
but
huge pollutant, you know.
You cannot control it because you cannot see it. But
right.
What's the next thing? You cannot live without it. You cannot live without air. What's the next resource that you absolutely need that you cannot live without for a couple days? is water.
Water.
And
yeah.
What's this big push right now?
Water.
You can see water and you can control it, which is exactly to your point, Aaron, about destroying dams. It's all about scarcity and creating a control mechanism for a resource that absolutely everybody needs on planet Earth to survive. And so what's coming up next in March of 2023 is a very, very important United Nations conference, and it's in New York City. Major UN conference, the second major conference in the United States of America under the United Nations, and it is about water. Mm. And that'll be March. All these meetings, including COP 15, the Biological Diversity Conference that California is in numbers represented up in Montreal right now at this conference, as well as COP 27 and COP 28, are gearing up for, or are these conferences gear up for the next big sustainable development goal, which we were talking about in the beginning. There's 17 of them. And the one that they're targeting, which is the one that they think is the most important, is target number 6, which is all about water. Because no one can live without water. No one can live without air, but they can't see it enough to control it. But you can see and control water. You can even control the water that falls off your roof.
Well,
which
and,
they wanted to
and beyond,
yeah.
even beyond the personal control, I mean, if you back way up from this stuff and you stop looking at how you think it'll affect, like, you and your community, when you back up on the water thing and you look at what's in store for that, that's how society develops. You can't put housing in an area where there is no water. So if they're cutting, you know, if they're controlling all these water sources, that's, again, because one of their goals is to force everyone into large cities.
Right.
Well, if you can't, I mean, when we were looking at a house, we knew that if we moved outside of the city limits, we would have, sky-high utility bills, electric utility bills, and we would have problems with water.
Yep.
So,
well, and this whole salmon situation is not about, we know it's not about the salmon. It's about the resource the salmon needs that they want to control, which is the river. That's why they're planting these endangered, you know, trout or salmon in these riverbeds, like the one that, in these rivers, like the one that they want to do that runs through my ranch right now. It's because they want control of all the water. They don't want you touching it without their permission. And when you do touch it, you're going to have to pay for it, even though you've already paid for it.
Right.
And we know that they're going to ratchet that up in the next year. And then after, you know, this big global water conference to say how scarce water is on planet Earth, even though we are a mostly closed system and water hardly leaves planet Earth. It exchanges with,
yeah,
I can't remember what planet, but it's not going anywhere, people. We're not running out of water.
No, and if we didn't flush 50% of California's water out to the ocean for the fish, they call it environmental purposes, a.k.a. fish. If they didn't flush 50% of it to the ocean for the fish, imagine how much different our, you know, quote, drought profile, unquote, would look in the summer.
Yeah.
So these are decisions. These are policy. It's just like forestry. It's no different than the fire thing. It's a man-caused disaster made by bad policy.
Right.
It isn't some random, oh, my gosh, you know, the world's out of control. We don't know how to fix it. Yeah, we know how to fix it. We're just not doing it. We're actually doing everything that makes it worse.
Well, I know that we're coming down to the end here, and I know that, you know,
which
I'm
is wrong.
Debbie Downer. I'm just always Debbie Downer. I'm bringing, you know, the truth of the, you know,
it's okay.
The bad
Kenny,
news,
Kenny Chesney's going to give us an upper at the end. He's got 51 seconds of happy music at the end. We'll be okay.
Well, I did want to mention that I hope your next week's guest, Nathan Deshamaker, I believe is how he pronounces his long last name. Whenever you have, for your listeners, whenever Aaron and Bill have this Nathan Deshamaker on their show, which hopefully is next weekend. He is phenomenal, and where I'm spreading the word, alerting people as to what's going on in, you know, the doom and gloom, we've got people like Nathan who are actually doing something to turn things around, and So super exciting to introduce you and your guests to this phenomenal young guy. And hopefully we can get him on next weekend. So
there's so much to know, and nobody's ever going to remember all of it except maybe you, because you go to all those conferences. But it's important to hear from people who have been to those things. Super important. So
yeah, I wish that we had more people going to these conferences. And, you know, one thing that we did not get into, and maybe we could do it another time, is what religious leaders did on Mount Sinai while we were there.
Let's talk about that next time, because we're into the final 20 seconds. Debbie Bacigalupi, we love you. You're our BFF all the time.
Always enjoy you.
Love you, guys.
And we always enjoy it, and we're happy that you go to the conferences. Well, we're not happy because it makes you all mad and everything, but we're happy you go, because then you can come back and tell us and we don't have to go. So you can find all of this and send it to your friends. We are at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Because there ain't no other place than on the sea I'd rather be. And that second coming's coming. It's right around the bend. And someday could be any day, and this world is gonna end. But that's alright, that's okay. There ain't nothing we can do about the whole thing anyway. It's a hang-on kind of ride. We're spinning through space and time, rocking this big old rock, just trying to have some fun. So let's drink another beer. Here's to another year. Let's take another crazy trip around the sun.